On the show today, Ukrainian security forces say they've uncovered an assassination plot against President Volodymyr Zelensky.
According to this report, the woman was preparing and reporting to Russian forces, Russian representatives, possible locations of President Zelensky.
Plus, Ukrainian naval drones attack again.
Saturday's attack came a day after a Russian warship was damaged at a Navy base in Novorossiysk. It was the first time the Ukrainian Navy has projected its power so far from its shores.
And later in the program, President Zelensky on peace talks in Saudi Arabia and a conversation with Human Rights Watch about possible war crimes in Liman. Today is Monday, August 7th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. News of an assassination plot against President Zelensky coming up in just a moment. First, though, a look at the destruction wrought by apparent Russian retaliation for Ukraine's attack on a Russian warship last week. The Associated Press's Jackie Quinn reports.
Russian forces have been pounding cities in western Ukraine. Apparent retaliation for Ukraine's attack on a Russian tanker in the Black Sea Friday. Ukraine's Air Force was showing off its firepower, but Russian fighters unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones from the air and sea. About a half dozen people were killed, and a blood donation center in Kharkiv was hit. President Volodymyr Zelensky denounced that as a war crime. There was shelling in the Donetsk region, which set a university building on fire. Despite the carnage, Zelensky is praising his Air Force.
Occupante.
For destroying some 4,000 Russian air targets. But he reminds Western allies his country still needs more air defense systems. I'm Jackie Quinn.
A famous Soviet monument in Kyiv undergoes some changes. But we're starting with the news that Ukrainian security services have uncovered a plot to assassinate President Zelensky. I'm joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
A security service of Ukraine actually reported that a woman was arrested from Mykolaiv region. So during this recent trip at the end of July to Mykolaiv region that President Zelensky had, according to this report, the woman was preparing and reporting to Russian forces, Russian representatives, possible locations of President Zelensky and a possible route plan. In addition, she was also accused of collecting information about Ukrainian forces, military forces equipment, and also ammunition storages and equipment storages. So for the moment, this is what we have. We don't have the name of the woman at this point as the investigation is ongoing. We just know that she is from Mykolaiv region and that she was arrested by the security service of Ukraine.
And another big story out of Kyiv today, a large monument in downtown Kyiv built during the Soviet times has gone through some changes. What does it look like now?
So this monument is demonstrating a warrior carrying a sword and shield, it is located on the Kyiv hills. So it's quite huge. It's one of the biggest, I think, in Europe. And on the shield, it used to be the Soviet sign locating just in the middle, and this sign was removed and replaced with Ukrainian trident. So now this monument, people's already started to call it not Motherland Monument, but Ukraine Monument. We will see if the name would be changed officially, but for the moment it remains as an old one. But the sign is already changed and some additional construction works are still ongoing, and it is, according to the plan, it should be done by the day of Ukrainian flag, which is on the 23rd of August.
Now, was that a controversial move in Kyiv? I know changing monuments is often a very touchy subject. Are there people in town who wanted to keep the monument the way it was?
I should say that that it was a discussion around this, but it was not discussion particularly about changing or not changing the sign, but about whether it's relevant at this point of time. So a lot of it is kind of a division of opinions that some people say that it's not time for such changes in terms of money investment. It's better to invest into the army. And some people say, well, this project was completely financed by private businesses, and it's up to them to decide where to kind of allocate this budget. So the discussion was around allocation of the budget during war on such thing, but not about changing or not changing the sign, because, well, I should say that most of Ukrainians don't want to have this Soviet legacy and Soviet signs around the country.
And of course, we're having this discussion in the first place because of the war. And it was another deadly weekend in Ukraine, massive attacks over the weekend from Russia, including hitting a blood transfusion center. Anna, can you quickly wrap up for us what happened over the weekend?
Yeah, very, very unfortunate hit by the Russian forces, by the Russian bomb that was reported in the city of Kupiansk, which is Kharkiv region. The hit was in the blood transfusion center. And as President Zelensky mentioned, that this demonstrates what kind of objects Russian forces do not refuse to also target. And unfortunately, there are people killed and injured. But for now, we're still waiting for the final numbers.
And we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
An attack by sea drones has damaged a Russian tanker near the strategic bridge linking Russia to the annexed peninsula of Crimea. This according to Russian authorities on Saturday. Reuters' Olivia Chan has the story.
Ukrainian intelligence released a video of a sea drone attack on a Russian tanker near the strategic bridge linking Russia to the annexed peninsula of Crimea. The source said the video was filmed on Saturday. Reuters was only able to identify the ship from the silhouette. The writing on the bridge also matched file imagery. According to Russian-installed officials in Crimea, no one was hurt, but the Crimean bridge and ferry transport were suspended for several hours. Russian media said the SIG vessel, approaching the Kerch Strait linking the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov, was hit by Ukrainian drones. Ukraine's Interfax agency, citing an unnamed Ukrainian security service source, also said Ukraine's navy was behind the attack with drones in its territorial waters. Kyiv seldom claims responsibility for attacks inside Russia or on Russian-controlled territory in Ukraine. Vasil Mayuk, head of Ukraine's SBU security service, did not directly say that Ukraine had attacked the vessel. But he commented that any incident with Russian ships or the Crimean bridge was, quote, an absolute logical and efficient step towards the enemy. Saturday's attack came a day after a Russian warship was damaged at a navy base in Novorossiysk. It was the first time the Ukrainian navy has projected its power so far from its shores. Russia's Novorossiysk Maritime Rescue Coordination Center was quoted by the IRA news agency as saying there was no fuel spill from the SIG, as the ship had been carrying only technical ballast. It said water had stopped pouring into the SIG and recovery work was underway with two tugboats nearby. The SIG had been supplying oil to Russian troops in Syria, according to Vladimir Rogov, a Russian-appointed official in Ukraine's southeastern region of Zaporizhia. The United States imposed sanctions on the tanker and its owner, St. Petersburg-based Transpetrochart, in 2019 for helping provide jet fuel in Syria.
And that's Olivia Chan of Reuters reporting for us today. On Saturday, President Zelensky said that rules-based international order must be restored as Kyiv seeks progress towards peace at peace talks in Saudi Arabia. The two-day meeting in Jeddah, attended by senior officials from some 40 countries, including the U.S., China, and India, is part of a diplomatic push by Ukraine to build support beyond its core of Western backers by reaching out to global South countries that have been reluctant to take sides in a conflict that has hit the global economy.
In total, 42 countries are represented here. Different continents, different political approaches to global affairs, but all are united by the priority of international law. And that is why Ukraine proposed the peace formula, because the rules-based international order, which was violated by Russian aggression, must be restored.
Russia is not attending the meeting, though the Kremlin has said it will keep an eye on the talks. Ukrainian, Russian, and international officials say there is no prospect of direct talks between Ukraine and Russia at present, with the war raging. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
Russia's foreign ministry has chided efforts by officials meeting in Saudi Arabia to find a peaceful end to the war in Ukraine, saying the talks can't be effective because Moscow, unlike Kyiv, wasn't invited. Senior officials from around 40 countries gathered on Sunday in Jeddah for a two-day meeting that aims to agree on key principles about how to end the conflict that's raged for more than 17 months. However, a Russian foreign ministry statement says without Moscow's participation and without taking into account Moscow's interests, the meeting is pointless. It repeated previous assurances that Russia's open to a diplomatic solution on its terms that ends the war and is ready to respond to serious proposals. But Mikhailo Podolyak, an advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, has ruled out Moscow's previous demands that would give Russia time to dig in deeper in the parts of Ukraine it occupies. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. We'll check in with Human Rights Watch about possible war crimes in just a moment. Now, following up on a topic we discussed in our previous show, tensions are high along the Poland-Belarus border after two Belarusian helicopters entered Polish airspace, and Poland's army has moved additional troops to the area. VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Mirosława Gongadze is there and filed this report.
Residents in the Polish town of Belowieża near the Belarusian border have reported incidents of border violations by two Belarusian military helicopters. The Polish Defense Ministry has confirmed these accounts, informed NATO, and deployed additional troops to the border. Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki, standing alongside the Lithuanian president, raised concerns about the movement of Russian Wagner forces in Belarus toward the Polish border.
On the Polish and Belarusian border, we have been experiencing hybrid attacks for 2 years. Russia and Belarus are raising pressure along the border with their provocations.
Poland has sent additional troops and military helicopters to the border to boost preparedness, says Defense Minister Mariusz Blaszczak.
To face the provocation from Belarus, because today we understand that Belarus now is a part of the Russian Empire, so the hybrid attacks on Poland are definitely coordinated with the Kremlin.
Belarus has denied airspace violations and accused Poland of making up the accusations to justify its troop buildup. On August 1st, Polish residents in Belowieża reported seeing two Belarusian helicopters flying at low altitudes. Mariusz Kurnyta, who volunteers with a local mountain rescue group, Ochotnicze Pogotowie Humanitarne, questions why the government only confirmed multiple sightings after they began to appear on social media. Kurnyta says his friend witnessed the helicopters.
She was walking her dog in the morning in Białowieża. They flew over her head and she took a picture of these helicopters that had stars, the Belarusian insignia. The government keeps saying that radars did not pick them up. But if we have such a powerful military as they say, thousands of military, police, border guards, it is strange they didn't notice the helicopters flying over their heads.
Funkcjonariuszy, czy to wojsko, straż graniczna, czy policja, to dziwne, że nie zauważyli tego, tak, jeżeli przeleciały im nad głowami.
Poland also accuses Russia and Belarus of using migrants to destabilize Poland and other EU countries, calling it a form of hybrid warfare. In response, Poland has constructed a 186-kilometer, 5-meter-high steel fence topped with razor wire, cameras, thermal vision surveillance equipment, and sensors. Mariusz Kurnyta says in the last 2 years he has helped many migrants who, he says, were sent to cross the border illegally.
Białoruś sprowadza ich i automatycznie oszukuje w ten sposób, że nie ma dla nich żadnej...
Belarus is bringing them here and automatically deceives them because they don't have a way to go back. Some of them are beaten, some are forced. On August 3rd, we had 13 Afghans who called for help. Two of them were injured, and some had visible signs of physical abuse.
Mieli urazy stopy, tam jakieś stare rany i w ogóle jakieś złamania wcześniejsze, z czego większość była pobita, po całym ciele mieli rozległe siniaki.
Polish officials now caution that Wagner mercenary fighters may be disguising themselves as Belarusian border guards to help migrants cross illegally and posing as migrants to enter NATO countries. The Belarusian government has denied provoking a border crisis but has said its troops have helped migrants cross the border into Poland. Marosława Gongadze, VOA News, Belowieża, Poland.
9 civilians were killed and more than a dozen injured in an apparent Russian cluster munition attack on July 8, 2023, in a residential district of the Ukrainian town of Liman. Human Rights Watch says that it might be a war crime. My colleague Steve Miller is joined by Rachel Denber, Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia for Human Rights Watch.
Human Rights Watch has documented this attack in Liman. 9 civilians killed, more than a dozen injured, in what HRW says may be a use of cluster munitions by Russia and is calling for it to be investigated for possible war crimes. And the first question I have is why couching it as possible war crimes? Why not just say that these are definitively war crimes?
Okay. We say possible war crime because really only a court could say whether it was a war crime. It's obviously a violation of international humanitarian law, violations of Geneva Conventions. So use cluster munitions in the presence of civilians. That's why there is a that's why there's a convention banning cluster munitions, because they're an indiscriminate weapon when they're used in areas where there are civilians. Clearly a violation, and in order to determine whether it's a war crime, there would need to be evidence showing that there is criminal intent. So when we say possible war crime, what we mean is that this should be investigated with a view to determining whether it's a war crime. Like we've done initial research, and there needs to be more investigation done on this case.
And to go back to your point about this being a violation of international humanitarian law to use cluster munitions, Ukraine, Russia, and the United States are not party to an all-out ban on cluster munitions. And if the parties that are actively using them in a conflict are not part of a treaty that bans their use, then can you go further into detail as to how you would hold someone accountable for a violation of international law when they're not party to a ban?
So a violation of international humanitarian law involving the use of cluster munitions isn't necessarily because they violated a convention of which they're not a party, as you just said, but it's because if there were an incident like in Liman where cluster munitions were used and civilians were harmed, then that would be a violation of international humanitarian law because it would amount to an indiscriminate and possibly intentional, we don't know, attack on civilians.
The United Nations has already conducted some investigations into possible war crimes, possible humanitarian rights violations, and those have come out, and those reporting has said that both Ukraine and Russia may have contributed to violations of human rights. But given that the conflict is still ongoing substantively, what can be done to hold perpetrators accountable for violating, you know, civilian human rights as this war continues?
So there are a number of different justice initiatives that are underway. There's the ICC and International Criminal Court's investigations or investigations by the Ukrainian Prosecutor's Office. There are cases that are open in a number of countries under their what's called universal jurisdiction laws. And there is a huge effort underway to by the European Union, individual European Union member states, by the United States, the UK, to support Ukraine's law enforcement agencies to investigate war crimes. All of these mechanisms are in play. And the fact that there has been an arrest warrant issued for Vladimir Putin and Maria Lvova-Belova, that all sends a very strong signal to the authors of the attacks in this war. I mean, I believe that it serves as a deterrent. Moreover, the work that these agencies and mechanisms do now to pursue justice, they need to do these investigations, you know, in real time, so that when the moment comes, you know, hold a Russian official accountable, we need to be ready with that. We need to be ready with the evidence. So that's why it's so important to have the evidence collection and the justice mechanisms fully in play right now. Justice is a very long game. And the investments that we make now, we need to be ready for the moment when we can get people in the dock.
Rachel Denber is Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia for Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with VOA's Steve Miller. And we'll end with some financial news today. The Russian ruble slid to more than a 16-month low, past 96 to the dollar early on Monday, hurt by strong local demand for foreign currency and lower support from exporters at the start of the month. The ruble was extending losses after dropping more than 4% against the dollar and euro to record one of its worst weeks all year. Russian authorities say lower export revenues and rebounding imports are the primary cause of the ruble weakening. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice. of America. Washington, D.C.